dancing in the apocalypse.
I gotta get up at 5 o'clock in the morning and sparkle, Neely, sparkle.
I know what some of your big city no bra wearing hairy legged women livers might say.
Hello, everyone.
Hello.
Hello, all. Listen up. You are listening to Maximum Film. It's episode 241, and we are about to get it done, okay? It's your host, Iffy Whitey Way. And in the, virtual studio with me, all my friends. So let me introduce you to them. First up, you know, the king of Christmas, fresh off of his own Vegas run of Christmas classics on the strip. It's Alonzo Duralde. What's good?
Oh, God. Iffy, what's good? Actually, I'm very excited that a project I was working on is making its way out into the world. It's going to drop on Tuesday. So TCM puts out, in addition to like books and other stuff, what I think this maybe falls in the category of ephemera. It is a jigsaw puzzle, a 500-piece jigsaw puzzle. On one side, 50 legendary leading ladies. On the other side, 50 legendary leading men. And with that puzzle comes a booklet. And I wrote 100 mini biographies of all of the people who were featured on this puzzle. Wow. And so, as Dave likes to tell people, I wrote a puzzle. So anyway, that's out on Tuesday, the TCM Leading Ladies, Leading Men puzzle. And I'm thrilled to have been a part of it. Just want to let people know about it.
That's so cool, Alonzo.
Yes. Make sure you get that. That sounds dope as heck.
You understand how few verbs there are to talk about like the main points of movie stars' careers, but you know, I made it work.
Oh, nice. Well, you know, you heard another voice, and fresh off of their Vegas run, it is the creator, writer, director of the One Woman Show, Don't You Know, but also super producer and queen of the Midwest, Drea Clark. What's good?
Yeah, a lot of crowds haggling for old Don't You Know. Big, hot number. What's good for me is actually something that's going to be good in the next few days, which is tomorrow I'm getting into my brand new automobile, and I'm driving to Northern California to see my beloved parents.
Ooh.
And I haven't seen them for a while. Am I a woman of a certain age that is still bringing laundry to her parents? Yes. That is happening. They have a really good washer and dryer. What can I say?
Is there a spreadsheet of Clark family activities?
You know it. I make that joke every time. My family gets together. We make a Google Doc, and we're each in charge of meals and activities. It's the best way to do things. It's the nerd way. Speaking of taking up two of those days of activities, I have convinced my parents to purchase a photo scanner, and we will be scanning the Clark family photo albums.
Nice.
And then putting them onto hard drives for my brother and my sister and myself.
Oh, wow. Oh,
and this is the kind of thing I am like psyched for and driving hours to do.
I have been desperately trying to get the slides preserved in some form or other, and they're all in various cellars in Atlanta, and I'm very worried about them.
Yes.
I'm nipping that in the bud.
That's so cool.
Lastly, we have an esteemed guest, and I'm excited to have them on because they are coming off of their Vegas run, Thunderdomed. It is culture critic for the New York Times and author of Blood, Sweat, and Chrome, The Wild and True Story of the Mad Max Fury Road. It's Kyle Buchanan. What's good?
A lot is good. I want to add on to what Drea was saying, that the act of doing laundry at your parents' house is something that sustained me well into adulthood. I really do think if I had to pick like the day I felt like an actual adult, it would be when I bought a washer and dryer. Nothing has transformed my life more. If I ever get a dishwasher, then it's just over.
my most Peter Pan attribute is my refusal to get a washer and dryer because I can use my parents who are 6 hours away.
I mean, it really transforms my ability to just wear whatever I want like a normal person.
That's fair.
But what's good, this season of Survivor, sometimes I'm like, am I the only person still watching, except that every other gay man I know is still watching. This is a season 42. I've watched every single one. I don't know, this is, you know, the grandfather of reality competition shows. Really set off the entire craze, and yet somehow still fresh, still exciting, still incredibly cast. A third of this season's cast is queer, which I love. And they're all either conniving, funny, messy, or all three. It's fun. It still is fun.
That's a delicious
formula. To be clear, Kyle, I am a gay man, you know, and I'm not watching it, but I understand that you pretend not to know me in public, so it's okay.
I will. I will revoke your membership card. Hopefully it's not laminated yet.
Iffy, what's good with you?
Oh, man. What's good with me is, you know, kind of like plugging my way through Severance. You know, we're getting, and I got to say, all the performance, delicious, great. You know, without saying too much, the Christopher Walken arc, probably my favorite. And I'm gonna just leave it at that. But beyond that, you know, just you know, living life. You know, been some fun, you know, adjustments in my life. That I feel like that's a fancy way to say that you're single now. you're like okay, cool. So I'm back to being a slut. So it's super exciting. I'm real excited for the summer to really, you know, really let the taco meat hang out. Gold chains hang upon my like thick chest, wear the shortest shorts when I'm in the gym. So
Phil, how are we graphing the Twitter thirst, just out of curiosity? Here,
I mean, it's definitely,
is there a spike coming? Is that the
thing? Yeah, there's gonna be DEFCON level red. Like, if you were excited about the promo post I did for Alonzo, just wait till you see. I wonder if Kyle's book is smaller, because it might need a promo post.
Oh, Lord.
Coming soon. Oh, well, look, we know you've all been holding your breath, and us too, for our long-awaited Aleen episode. And here it is. I know you're ready. Later on, we're going to add on to the fun by pitching some new biopic ideas. But first, it's time for Itadic, short for Is This Important? Do I Care? Where we go through the week's movie news and decide whether we think it's important or if we care. Alonzo has the first one.
Well, this is just a confluence of annoying things all coming together to make one big magic soup of extra annoyance. Warner Brothers is removing references to the principal gay relationship in a new movie for the Chinese release. And of course, that would be Fantastic Beasts, The Secrets of Dumbledore, which drops in theaters this weekend. The film includes the first overt reference to famous wizard good guy Albus Dumbledore's relationship with rival bad guy wizard Gellert Grindelwald. But Warner Brothers has confirmed that for the film's release in Chinese cinemas, the lines referring to that gay love story were cut. According to The Hollywood Reporter, the cuts represent only 6 minutes. Sorry. 6 seconds. 6 seconds of the 143-minute film, but they do remove, among some other things, some pretty major character motivations. Is this important? Do you care?
I mean, I'm with Alonzo on just the exciting perfect storm of bummerhood that this movie and every release about it seems to represent. Like, it's so right? Like, that's the sound my soul makes when I hear those. I think it's important in that it is annoying, but it's also annoying because it's literally a global thing, right? Like, the idea of artistic decisions being made by Warner Brothers to appease the Chinese government is its own thing. That right. Those decisions are homophobic and hurtful to an audience that could benefit from even the smallest is annoying. The idea that 6 seconds is something, is a crumb that they should be happy to get. Right, like,
yeah, it's the mix of studios throwing the tiniest of crumbs to the LGBTQ community, but then also very happily vacuuming those crumbs away the second that some, you know, important market with a totalitarian regime running it like complains about it. And of course, all of this in a big basket of JK Rowlingness just really, you know, brings it all home.
Has anybody else had to suffer through watching this movie besides me?
Not I.
I saw it last night at a press screening. Okay, so a couple notes. One is that, yes, it is 6 seconds. It's a little more significant than I think that sounds. I mean, yes, you can snip it out, I suppose. But in the very first scene, Jude Law talks about how he loved Mads Mikkelsen. Very Hannibal vibes. And then it gets, and then he talks about it later. That might not amount to much in the, you know, the sense that you can cut those lines out, but pretty significant that a children's movie, I guess, opens with, you know, your hero wizard talking about a man that he loved. Somewhat significant. I mean, I'm not rushing to give J.K. Rowling her flowers because this is a terrible movie. A complete 2-hour, 30-minute stall where nothing happens with characters you don't care about, and there's too many of them. It's the worst impulses of franchise filmmaking when people just assume they can just make a whole series of films, and so nothing happens in any of them because they're spreading the jam over multiple you know, pieces of bread. And so all you end up with is a dry piece of bread. That is Secrets of Dumbledore, gay though it might be, except in China.
God, I hope they put that all on the poster. Will it all fit?
I will give J.K. Rowling, yes, the tiniest bit of credit that, yes, after years of non-canonically insisting that Dumbledore was gay, that she is finally, like, putting her, you know, her money where her mouth is in terms of this one tiny thing. But that does not let her off the hook for everything else.
Well, who knows how much drive she has in that either? Like,
I mean, it's a whole lot of people making the wrong decisions. Yeah.
And she co-wrote this one with Steve Clovis, who they're bringing back in a desperate attempt to make these more Harry Potter-ish, but apparently didn't work.
But I will say on the removing it from this Chinese edit, and it sounds terrible, and I won't be seeing it unless it's like on a plane watched by the person next to me and I catch it out of my periphery. But it would have been nice if it hadn't been cut and was never a story. And then that was just something, a motivation about this character that was just presented to American audiences without this uproar behind it. Like a bunch of people going with their families to see this and being like, oh, Dumbledore Ed is heartbroken by this man and how moving and beautiful that is. Rather, now we all know about that because of this being edited. Boo.
Yeah, well, you know, I tweeted earlier today that the movie is 2.5 hours of gay exes talking shit about each other to their friends, and I regret tweeting it because I made the movie sound interesting.
Way better. That movie I want to see, actually.
Yeah. All right, talking about movies, that's my segue. Talking about movies. So Netflix has added a 2 thumbs up button. If you're pining for the days when Netflix offered you more movie rating options than a single thumbs up or thumbs down, have we got some good news? No, the 5-star rating system is not being established. There is now a 2 thumbs up button that allows users to separate the likes from the loves, or as we say around here, the streamits from the screenits. Is this important? Do you care?
I mean, I'm generally in favor of smashing the binary, but like this really seems like a very minor thing. Like, at least also give me a 2 thumbs down. I mean, Netflix gave us The Bubble and Don't Look Up in recent months. So I think let's not shilly-shally around here, you know.
Can I ask a question? Do you guys, no part of me ever uses any of those on any algorithm. I'm like, no, you don't get to know how I felt about this movie. F your face. Oh,
if I get annoyed enough, I'll like thumbs down, you know.
Interesting.
Yeah. And I thumbs up Apollo 10 and a half, you know, but yeah, it's okay. Not a thing I always do.
Yeah, I was like in my early Netflix days real into, because remember you used to be able to write reviews that people can read.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And I, that's when I was interested. And then when it turned to like just a percentage, I was like, no one's ever right. Like you go on Rotten Tomatoes, like I hate that like nerds are always like, look, yeah, the critics hated this movie, but a bunch of us nerds liked it. I was like, yeah, what does that say about you? Not them.
Oh, off on a tangent here. I loved all the coverage of the audience score for Morbius, how that was an indicator that movie was going to be the summer of Morbius. And then the second weekend drop is like a record plunge. So it's like,
oh, yeah, because Morbius called up Trump and was like, who did y'all use to get these fake votes and shit? Because we needed that for our movie. Because like some of these like manufactured fan screenings that Jared Leto would show up to, I was like, y'all don't even, there was one person who brought his dog. So I'm like, you definitely called like central casting and had people show up for Morbius. Because everyone's wearing a Morbius t-shirt. Get out of here. Come on now. Nah, you're not fooling me.
This does remind me of the glorious heyday of when Netflix was just a DVD company, and we would go to their website, and we would rate the movies we liked from 1 to 5 stars, and we thought, ooh, how cute, how funny, there's an algorithm that's going to tell us, based on those movies, what we might like. And now everything is so micro-targeted to us.
Yeah.
And I hate it. So I don't plan to give anybody any more data than
I need. Oh, man. That was if this is a slight turn, then we'll jump into mine. But that was just as when I got an update on my Tesla today. And it was like, do you want to send your
Tesla
cabin?
Today? Yeah. Oh, Lonzo, did you catch that?
It's come again? What?
Oh.
Don't worry, it gets immediately Black Mirror-y. Because it's an update, and it was like, oh, do you want to send your cabin cam footage to the company for to help our system get better or whatever? And I was like, cabin cam? And then I looked up and I was like, oh, there's been an inaccessible camera that looks at my cabin this whole time. And I was like, I want access to that, let me put some dumb shit.
I cannot imagine what happens inside your car either.
Oh, yes,
it is
you can.
A much
you
more exciting
know.
View. Right, I know. Yeah. They don't care what I'm up to in my Ultima, going to the dentist.
Let's upload Iffy's to OnlyFans.
Oh,
Now that makes me rethink everything I've done in my car.
Minority Report tried to warn us, and we just went along our business.
All right. Well, we got some exciting news because there's going to be a Spirit Halloween movie. Just when you thought we were running out of ideas, capitalism steps up to prove that anything, and I mean anything, can be an IP. The Spirit Halloween chain, famous for supplying spooky costumes and taking over defunct big box store locations, is stepping into the movie game with a new movie called Spirit Halloween. Though the news just broke, the movie has reportedly already wrapped production and is slated for release this October. And it's going to star Christopher Lloyd and Rachel Lee Cook, and is set in a haunted Spirit Halloween store. Before I ask the question, I will have to quote friend of the pod, Riley Silverman, who said this was originally an Office Max movie. Is this important? Do you care?
This is in the rare category of not important, but I do care.
Ooh.
Just because I sort of admire the chutzpah of it. I always like to quote, Adam Vary did that great oral history of the movie Clue, and I believe it was Michael McKean who said, you can make a great movie or a terrible movie out of anything. Clue is based on a board game. Robert Wise's The Setup is a boxing movie that's based on a poem. So IP only gets you so far. And so, obviously, yes. Did anybody want to see a Barbie movie? No. Do we want to see a Barbie movie that is being written and directed by Greta Gerwig? Yes. Yes, we do. So, I'm kind of curious to see just what the hell a Spirit Halloween movie even is.
I do think it's a bit misleading to say it's Christopher Lloyd and Rachel Lee Cook. It's a kids movie. Has a very Goonies, Gremlins. It's about four kids who are stuck in the store. And I think that to me changes the potential vibe
are going to be cameos.
Is this parody? Is this campy? Or is this just no, we just got money. I'm going to shout out my friend Noor Ahmed, who runs the company that's making this. So I hope he gets a lot of money and takes me out for dinner. And it's a great success. Honestly, I would be happy to sell out if a company like that was
buying.
We'll fund your movie. Because you can do a lot. This is an interesting thing because they basically sold a location, right? It's even different than your Lego or your Barbie of having a character, as long as it's not a transitive property, literally, of all Spirit Halloweens are haunted. You might die if you go there. If instead you're just you have this cool venue. I don't know.
Look, you take your haunted house script, you search and replace and make it a Spirit Halloween, and you're bam.
Yeah, Drea, can you ask your friend? I have a Buffalo Wild Wing spec. if we can do anything with that. I want to make sure before HBO gets it.
Yes, I will also be attaching myself. But yes, we're going to move on that as soon as we finish recording.
I think the rights to all of the four baseball games playing at any time is going to be prohibitive. But maybe if MLB signs on as a co-producer.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I would jump in, but I'm deep in my Wing Street spec that I'm taking.
Oh, no. Yeah, yeah. It's a deep impact Armageddon situation.
Well, he's doing that at the asylum when yours comes out.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's great. Well, on that note, we're going to take a break. But when we come back, we're going to tell you about a little lady called Aline Dew.
Every Plate is America's best value meal kit. While most meal kits come with a premium price tag, Every Plate offers delicious dinners that won't break the bank. Choose from 17 delicious weekly recipes and then, well, sit back. They'll deliver pre-portioned ingredients and easy-to-follow recipe cards right to your front door. Think of it like this. One meal from Every Plate is about the same price as one cup of coffee and probably cheaper than most of the fancy coffee drinks you have out there. If you're looking for a quick and satisfying fix, Every Plate now offers a selection of recipes that come together in just 20 to 25 minutes, as well as easy cleanup options.
So if you are trying to figure out a way to be a better cook and a better adult, and you are someone who drinks fancy coffee drinks that Alonzo would snub his nose at, I did try the Every Plates, and I am someone who, full disclosure, I hate cooking. It's not because I find it difficult, because I think anybody could cook. It is definitely easy with this. So I got, like, everything is pre-proportioned and the menu is easy and it's very simple. So it didn't feel like the catastrophic waste of my time that cooking normally feels. Also because I got 3 dinners, which equaled 6 meals, because they were just for this gal, which felt like an even bigger bonus, especially at the sort of price point these are at. So yes, it was very easy and it was very delicious. And one of them was this like lemon cream chicken and potato and zucchini thing. And I swear I've been craving this lemon cream sauce ever since.
Oh, yes, indeed. And if you want to be craving some sauces, try Every Plate for just $1.79 per meal by going to everyplate.com and entering code MAXFILM179. That's everyplate.com and code MAXFILM179.
Max Fun Drive is just around the corner.
2022.
Starting April 25th, it's the best time of the year to support your favorite shows by becoming a Max Fun member or upgrading your membership.
In just 2 weeks.
We've got some great episodes and amazing thank you gifts in store. And who knows, maybe a few surprises.
Don't forget bonus content.
So make sure to tune in starting Monday, April 25th to get all the juicy details on what each show has in store.
Actually, wait, what are the details anyway? And why are they juicy? That's kind of a strange adjective to describe.
Back to Maximum Film. I'm your host, Ify Wadiwe. In the studio with me are
Drea Clark,
Kyle Buchanan,
Alonzo Duralde.
Today's movie is a musical of sorts, directed by and starring Valerie Lemercier. It follows the life of fictional French Canadian pop star named Aline Dew. It premiered at Cannes last year and, after several delays, is finally playing in U.S. theaters. So, Alonzo, go ahead and do us the honors by hitting us with a brief synopsis of today's feature, Aline.
So it's a really far-fetched plot. It's about this girl, and she's like the 15th child of this French-Canadian family, 14th child, and, you know, they're all musical, but she is this prodigy with a beautiful golden voice, and very immediately the family realizes that, you know, she's off to bigger and better things. They get her a manager who, you know, starts getting her music out there. She falls in love with the manager, even though he's much older than she is and he's been divorced several times. And they get married anyway. And she winds up becoming the queen of Las Vegas. And, you know, you would never believe this if it were not in a fictional film that happens to feature the songs of Celine Dion.
Okay.
Qua?
Qua?
I'm so glad that Kyle Buchanan is here because this is all your fault. We've been obsessed with this movie from the moment you wrote that piece out of the Cannes Film Festival last year for the New York Times, which is one of those reviews that money can't buy. Like, I'm sure the distributors were like, oh, yes, he's captured exactly why people are going to be obsessed with this movie. So walk us through that magic moment.
Yes.
That, when you walked in, did you know what you were getting here?
Because we watched this. We've been talking about this for months and months. Watched the trailer with bated breath, read your review, did all this.
Well, the thing with Cannes is, you know, you think of it as this high holy temple that plays, you know, only the most artistic of cinema. And every year there is some wacko movie that is in that lineup or hovering around the fringes that makes you go, what? And this year, I think probably the week before I left for France, the trailer, the French trailer for it had made its way online and everybody was kind of like, what the hell is this? A campy looking unauthorized Celine Dion biopic. So I was like, definitely going to go see that. In fact, I'm trying to remember, I think it was actually playing against Titan, which won the Palme d'Or. And, you know, any normal, sensible people went to the premiere screening of Titan. I did not. Myself, Richard Lawson from Vanity Fair, and Rachel Handler from Vulture, we all were like, no, obviously, we're seeing Aline. So we went to this screening room, and I believe the very first scene, or the very first thing you see, is a title card saying that the first scene takes place in, I want to say, like 1895.
Yeah.
And I just cracked. I mean, I was already ready to crack up. The fact that the Celine Dion biopic opens with a scene set in like 1895, correct me if I'm wrong, it's around there. It's not like the day that she was born or anything. You know, it's where like the grandparents, that's how far back we're reaching. You know, you've heard of Cradle to the Grave biopics. This extends.
You have to know where that coin comes from. It's very important.
Yeah. I mean, so it's just one of a set of hilarious, befuddling choices in the first act. We didn't know who Valerie Le Mercier is. You know, she is a French-Canadian comedian.
She's just French.
She's not Canadian.
Oh, she's
right?
just French.
Yeah.
Well,
she starred in a Claire Denis film with Vincent Lindon from Titan.
She also starred in like a blackface movie, I believe. So.
Yeah. And she was in like Les Visiteurs, I think, like which was a big hit.
In any case, I guess she's better known from her Target demo for playing children a lot. We didn't know that. nobody outside, I think, the French-speaking world would have any idea of that. So when I tell you that the movie introduces a four-year-old Celine Dion played by a woman pushing 60 using special effects, Hobbit technology, and sheer chutzpah. We lost our shit, and the shit was never recovered. We looked around for the shit. It's hard to find it in the dark.
Yeah.
And she continues playing Celine at every age, and it's just... truly wild.
I think you mean Aline? Is there a connection?
Aline.
which let's not forget there's a moment where she's accidentally called Celine, and then they're like, nope.
No. Aline.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I want us to answer a question that I furiously Googled a few times when I started watching it, even though we've talked about this coming up. Is this a comedy or a drama?
Yes.
Good question.
So my number one takeaway with this film by the end, because I was like aghast for a lot of it, I'll be honest, it did make me cry a few times. It could also have to do with whatever hormonal state I was at when I watched it. And I really enjoy crying at films. But I was like, oh, there's stuff with her mom. I'm a sucker for that. It's not like, oh, well, that really got me there. Anything that made me cry was truly manipulative. But when it finished, I was like, oh, this movie was made for an audience of one. This movie was made for Celine Dion. Like, it was not, there wasn't even a, will Celine Dion fans like this, or will a broader audience? I truly was like, every artistic decision was, how would Celine feel about this moment? And that's where you get things like Kyle just said, that we see her as a 12-year-old child meeting this manager for the first time, and then is in love with him immediately, like has a photo of him for years. And then nothing, of course, happens until she's like 20 or something, you guys.
18,
and he's
right.
And he's like, oh, no, I would not. Like, he has to be coerced into it. Like, every single thing about her love story with her husband, I was like, she absolutely wrote this with Celine in mind.
Do we think that the reason that Le Mercier plays the role the whole time is so that when pubescent Celine falls in love for not Renee Angelil, that it's less weird to the audience because we know the actress is, you know, his age, basically.
She has been asked that in interviews, and I think she's like, that didn't occur to me.
Okay.
My answer to that is she's French. I should have known she was French and not French-Canadian, because she's like, oh no, this is a love story. What's wrong? This, like, even though 12-year-old braces Celine, or Aline, played by a pushing 60-year-old woman, is making goo-goo eyes and getting super horny for her adult gray-haired manager. It's craziness.
To answer Iffy's question about is this a comedy or a drama, that's what one of the things that I think is so fascinating about this film is that it exists in this space where, on the one hand, it feels like fan fiction cosplay made by somebody who clearly adores Celine Dion and is nothing but reverent towards Celine Dion. And at the same time, if one were doing a wacky spoof of the life of Celine Dion, it would look not unlike this. So it occupies this weird space of being both reverent and like ridiculous at the same time. And whether or not that's how Valerie Le Mercier was setting out to do it, she's accomplished something that shouldn't exist in nature.
Yeah, it kind of starts out much more of a comedy, or at least any normal person who doesn't know this woman would think so. It's crazy to me that she won the César for Best Actress, indicating that maybe other people do take it more seriously. And, you know, Drea, when you were talking about crying at the end, it's worth noting that once she catches up to Celine's actual age, I mean, she's still older than actual Celine Dion, but like once she's an adult and whatever, then it starts sort of ticking off traditional biopic beats and you're less jarred by the difference. However, you are still haunted by the first hour of this movie, which is incredible chaos. So you're living on the knife's edge, even as things, you know, become somewhat more traditional. So is it a comedy or a drama? It's like both without even meaning to be either.
There's also, it is so true to her real life. And if you know anything about Celine Dion, nothing of this is unexpected. Like her being the 14th out of 14 and just all of that stuff. And like all of her family was musical. So, but if you didn't know that, that idea of this being a comedy, it is what you'd pitch. You're like, what if Celine Dion was actually like the 14th child and they all live in a really small house, and let's make sure they have all of their meetings in the kitchen and they all have to be there. And then let's have her be, do you know what I mean? Like there's so much like that seems fantastic.
Well, no, and at the same time, like I think it kind of defies what we're used to from a music biopic, because Celine's life has been pretty great, you know? Like, there's no, like, years of early struggle. She starts singing when she's, like, 12 and immediately is successful. She marries the man that she's been in love with her whole life, however you want to read into that. You know, they struggle to have children, and then they have children. And then, like, you know, yes, he does die, and that is sad. And actually, I think one of the most emotionally impactful moments of the film is when she goes and crashes at the makeup artist's place and sort of dreams that he's sleeping there next to her on the sofa. But like, Celine Dion's had a pretty great life, you know, like there's no rehab or bankruptcy or like, you know, big artistic, you know, setbacks that she's had to work her way back from. It's just been pretty much climbing that.
It would be really dull behind the music. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, no, she climbed Mount Everest without going to the Valley of the Dolls.
Yeah, no, she just straight up has been chilling in Vegas, stacking dough. I think the closest thing we got to drama was when she lost her voice. But, you know, to kind of touch on the fantastical nature, yeah, you're right. Because all of these, after watching it, I was like, I gotta go to the Celine Dion Wikipedia. And I was like, yeah, a lot of this stuff that I assumed was fake is real. So this happened.
Okay.
Yeah. You're like, oh, that wasn't a bit. Okay. Got it.
I think it's also worth noting, though, that the real Celine Dion's energy is extremely wacky and also earnest at the same time. Everything that makes the actual Celine so wacky and funny is not necessarily something that she's self-aware about. So maybe this actually is the perfect energy for a movie about her. It is as dorky as Celine is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What I do credit her performance with, especially, like, she had, there's another woman who's doing the vocals and does an exquisite Celine Dion
impression. Victoria Cio.
But I did think that Valerie, the star and director, she nailed that Celine is dorky as hell. Like, she has no sense of rhythm. She's, like, been this scrawny, like, awkward, like I'm a cool mom, but, like, since she was 18. Like, I'm not a regular mom. I'm a fun mom. Like, that's her energy always.
She nails the dorky air guitar that Celine likes to do.
Yeah, the air guitar, the, like... Oh, I'm going to do, like, her elbows are always in the weirdest place. Like, all of those things are so spot on. Akimbo,
I believe, is the word you want here.
Yes. And even there's this one bit where she's on, like, a talk show in France, and she's telling this casual anecdote of her husband almost dying, and it's hilarious. Even how she was saying that, I loved how Kyle says the, like, lack of self-awareness. She does. It's that to me was pervasive in this performance of just like, oh, I just, this is how I talk. And there's no, like, that was kind of remarkable to me. And then how funny you find that or compelling you find it may be measured by how into or knowledgeable you are about Celine Dion.
Yes, indeed.
Iffy, I imagine you are a Celine Dion devotee. Mega fan. Yeah.
Now, I will say there was just certain hits I was waiting for. And, you know, when we got to My Love Will Go On and the little, like, I hate this song, it was great. The Oscar moment, you know, and her singing it, that was great.
By the way, I have to point out, the Oscars in this movie is played by those crappy little souvenir statuettes that you buy on Hollywood Boulevard, where the guy's got his elbows pointing out and he's holding, like, a laurel wreath in front of his chest. Like, they're not
they
even
use
drawn.
The actual one.
Well, of course. But
I was shocked they got the rights to My Heart Will Go On. I thought for sure they were going to build up to her singing the song and then cut. No, we got it.
You know, one of the great anecdotes you hear about that Oscar night is that apparently she was very nice to Elliot Smith, who was nominated that year for the song from Good Will Hunting, I think. And he apparently was, like, a nervous wreck backstage, and she was, like, very sweet and soothing to him. And he was like, yeah, Celine Dion came up and was nice to me. And so,
and
like,
then,
you know,
she grew her children's hair out in tribute to Elliot Smith later on. Her little long-haired baby boys. There's so many things about this that if you're going to look up Celine, and again, I'm repeating myself, but not just about her childhood, but about, like, the choices she made and, like, the direction that it really does surprise you of how insulated this woman has been from the real world her whole life. And I do think that this movie conveys that, like, when they do her, like, world tour of just her at the, like, different stadiums, like, backlit, like, there's just so much of it. It was reminding me of, like, it is a rare thing to find another human who's gone through this life as protected and veiled from the actual world. I just want to know if she ever did do a runner around Vegas. I know the answer is no, because she could not walk far enough in any pair of shoes that she owns. But
I would like to think so, that, yeah, that she sometimes puts on a nose, you know, and, like, goes out and, you know, plays the slots or something.
There is a joke where I believe the movie and myself are on the same page as recognizing it as an intentional joke, which is when Aline gets lost in her Vegas mansion. like literally
yes.
lost.
Yes.
She can't find her way out.
That was great.
That I enjoyed. You know, the tribulations of the ultra wealthy. But yeah, I mean, I keep coming back to Iffy's question of whether it's a comedy or a drama. And I really do think maybe it's in the eye of the beholder. It's funny to me that this can be a César winning film, you know, in France. But here in America, the quotes in the trailer from critics are exclusively from those of us who were in that Cannes screening, cracking up, having the time of our lives. I think they knew that's how they wanted to position it. And I think that is their core demo here in the U.S.
Yeah, yeah. I think hardcore Celine fans are sort of not necessarily supporting this because it's somebody else singing the songs. The names have been changed, so they think it doesn't exactly have the official imprimatur of their lady. And so they're just like, maybe not, you know. So, yeah, that does kind of leave it to the cinematic curiosity seekers among us who are like, oh, you got to see this.
Do you know this to be true, Alonso, or are you channeling your inner Celine?
I'm basing it on just sort of things I've picked up on social media where some fans have been kind of annoyed by it. I know a lot of people have been trying to get a comment from Celine about this movie, and she's been tight-lipped. The only response has been apparently the family is not crazy about it because they think that they've been portrayed as a bunch of bumpkins. You know,
I feel like more than bumpkins, if you really did like a darker analysis of this, the fact that there's this recurring thing that her father is just browbeaten from the day he meets the mother and like has his life overrun. And he's like, it's like, there, that's your comedy setup, right? He's like, I don't want any kids. And then they cut to a montage of her just cranking out baby after baby after baby. The whole time I was like, is this a horror story about this man who's basically being held hostage by a bunch of children and a French Canadian woman? Because I would watch that spinoff. I'm just saying.
I did learn apparently that France French people find the way that French Canadians say certain words are hilarious.
Oh, no, no. It's like a different language. Like if you are from Paris and you go to Montreal, it's like this, what are you? Yeah. Native French speakers. That's a whole other
Dave
thing.
Compared it like Scotland and Texas. You know, they are technically both speaking English, but
very much. You know. It's a very strong. That's the other reason I would love to hear from like a Quebecois how Valerie did with her accent. Because I bet it was kind of funny.
We got to tap in.
I have no ear for that. But yeah, Zay, if you are listening and you
let us know.
You know the answer, please tell us.
Yeah, hijack another poll that I'm in the lead of. How about you do that?
Aileen enters the Speed Force.
All right. I think it's time for a vote. So who wants to kick this thing off?
For me, I would say this is a screen it. Largely because I think it's an enjoyable watch with someone else. I did not get to watch it with someone else. But I did try and figure out how to send Alonso pictures because there were several moments that I was like, it may not be a comedy, but I don't know if anything is ever going to make me laugh harder than when she's been sent away for 2 years to basically mature and gets her hair done and her teeth fixed and like grows boobs or whatever, and then opens the door to see her cute, chubby, older manager and like whips her hair. There's a little gleam in her teeth, and I can't remember the song to save my life, but this movie does have a ton of other great non-Celine Dion songs, and that was the funniest moment ever. So I would have highly enjoyed watching this with the group and to maybe, you know, never find my shit again, just like Kyle.
Yeah, I hope this becomes a midnight movie because I also will say screen it. It is a movie that you just can't believe what you're seeing for big chunks of it. And I think it does demand to be experienced in that way. And as somebody whose heart sank during the Oscars this year when I realized that both Best Actor and Best Actress went to people who were in biopics, which means we're getting another decade of just deadly prestige biopics made by actors who want to slather on the latex and like chase Oscar gold. Let's shake that genre up. And this movie is like is doing something to biopics that I've never seen before, and I dare anybody else to do it.
Yeah, I say screen it if you can find somebody who's like-minded, who will stare at you in shock and horror and laugh at the same things. Otherwise, stream it. It does demand to be seen with your tribe if you can muster one up.
Yeah,
I think that's the best way to say it. Your tribe, not another person, because the person I did watch this with hated it. So,
is this why you're single now?
Aline, oh no.
Yeah, it's like, sorry, if you don't like Aline, you gotta hit the streets. Yeah, no, Aline for me, yeah. I'd say, wow. It's still gonna be a screen for me. I think it is one of those things, like, this should be getting screened the same way Memoria is, so that where people, you know, you gotta see it live, and you gotta just come out and talk about it. You can only hear about it from word of mouth. You're only, because this is truly an experience that I'm glad I got to witness live and direct. I guess we'll be right back after you're from another show for maximum fun.
Soylent, the original food tech company, makes delicious and nutritious nutrition products in convenient formats, such as their Soylent Complete Meal, Soylent Squared, I love the peanut butter ones, Complete Energy, and Complete Protein to make your own high protein nutrition shakes.
Oh, yes. And I've been cranking those protein shakes of, like, right after workouts. And, you know, I've been, getting towards the end of the room. And it's really been great to have all the Soylent around to just be like a nice meal replacement when I don't want to go and make a full meal. So I'm jazzed. I'm loving it. And, you know, the best thing about it is I'm getting a complete balanced nutrition made from U.S. grown sustainable sourced ingredients, making this good for me and the planet. So I'm loving it, and you should be too.
Go to Soylent.com/MaxFilm and use promo code MaxFilm to get 20% off your first order. That's Soylent, Soylent.com/MaxFilm and promo code MaxFilm for 20% off your first order.
Look, it's a rough world out there, especially lately. I get it. So let's take care of our minds as best we can. I'm John Moe, host of Depression Mode with John Moe. Every week, I talk with comedians, actors, writers, musicians, doctors, therapists, and everyday folks about the obstacles that our world and our brains throw in front of us. Depression, anxiety, traumatic stress, all those mental health challenges that are way more common and more treatable than you might think.
The first time I went to therapy, I was so ashamed, and I was like, can't believe I gotta go into therapy. Like, I thought I could be a man, and Humphrey Bogart was never in therapy. And then my dad said, yeah, but he smoked a carton of cigarettes a day.
Give your mind a break, give yourself a break, and join me for Depression Mode with John Moe.
Welcome back to Maximum Film. I'm your host, Ify Wadiway. In the studio with me are
Alonzo Duralde,
Kyle Buchanan,
Drea Clark.
And today we talked about a movie that really embraced the blurred line between biopic and fanfic.
Biopic.
This has been long fought.
It's like when I say Spider-Man. If you say it too many times, you can't say it the right way.
It's long fought because some asshole said it's biopic when I said biopic, and then people were like, it could be this way, it could be that way, and I'm.
Don't let me tell you how to do things.
No. This is how you want, kid. This is a good combo to have. But I will say I was originally team biopic, and then some shithead talked down to me, and for some reason I've been honoring that shithead.
And you rarely do.
I was gonna say.
Oh, you know me.
You love to ignore shitheads.
I love to ignore shit. Period. Yes. We'll say for this one, and we definitely got to keep that whole discussion in. It is the blurred line between biopic and fanfic. So it seemed like the perfect opportunity to pitch some new biopics of our own. What's a biopic that hasn't been made yet that you want to see? Or maybe that it has been made, but you want to see a different version.
I have a real one. Like, I have some goofy ones in mind, but the real biopic that I want to see is Bayard Rustin, who is like one of the major architects of the March on Washington in the 1960s, was like kind of the guy behind the guy of MLK. And because he was openly gay, he tended to sort of like work in the background and, you know, was sort of like stayed in the shadows, but made a lot of what MLK accomplished possible. And his life is fascinating. He was a jazz singer in nightclubs for a long time before becoming a civil rights activist. And so I just think that it's a movie that writes itself. I think it would be, you know, it's this great sort of civil rights biopic. It's a queer biopic, and there's music, and it's diegetic. So, like, yeah, I think there needs to be a Bayard Rustin movie stat.
Well, Alonso, you will be happy to hear that you are getting it later this year.
What?
Starring Coleman Domingo and produced by Barack and Michelle Obama. They already shot it.
See, the secret works, you guys.
Wow. Yeah, you it was like you made it happen right before your very eyes, Alonso.
I had no idea of that. That's honestly very exciting.
Mm. That is. I have to say, I went earnest as well. When I was thinking about it, I'm like, ooh, who would I want to pitch? And at first I was like, had to steer myself away from Hollywood figures. Mm. Because if you, Alonso can attest to this, and I'm sure Kyle has to see a bunch of these as well, the amount of movies made about filmmakers is like, oh, like kill me dead. So in looking at a broader
The offer
world,
coming soon to Paramount Plus.
Exactly. So my pick is Freddie and Truus Overstegen, who were Dutch sisters who were recruited to the Dutch resistance at age 14 and 16 and ended up like in addition to their family sort of taking Jewish refugees into their home during the war, while these young women were in the resistance, were luring Nazis to be shot and killed in the woods, and then were trained as like shooters themselves, and did all of this stuff to sort of what they could for their country. And to me, it's, well, I'm sure you could do one gross side of it of just like, ooh, isn't it sexy how these girls like were honey potting or whatever. But there's also the idea of how difficult that is, and that these women spent their whole lives. And I just think it's rich with story possibility. And, you know, they were a threat of death their whole lives. And certainly as young women, it wasn't expected of them to be, you know, volunteering and taking this. They were blowing up bridges and railroads and stuff. Anyway, So the Overstegen sisters, I would enjoy making a film about, to make it emotionally complicated, which is what I like to bring to the table in friendships and in films.
I see Saoirse Ronan and Kiernan Shipka.
Ooh. Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah, I like that too.
Now, I have a goofy one, I was thinking like Angeline and Weird Al Yankovic already have biopics like coming within the next year or so. So they were taken. You know, Larry Karaszewski and Scott Alexander took a lot of the other like oddball sort of fringe of the business. So I wound up with Clara Peller, who was the Where's the Beef lady, just because that just seemed like she was like the last sort of like pop culture footnote that no one's gotten around to making a biopic yet. I don't know anything about her life or how interesting or dull it was, but I feel like, you know, we don't have a lot left.
I went in a direction suggested by Aline, a comedian, and I went with Billy Eichner as Lincoln. I want to see the Aline version of Lincoln with Billy as Abraham Lincoln. I've actually heard that there's a runner in Billy Eichner's upcoming movie Bros, where they talk about Lincoln being gay, so it feels like a natural seg.
And many historians have talked about that as well.
Luke McFarlane can play Josiah Speed or whatever that guy's name was.
The guy his roommate that he shared a bed with, just because it was so difficult to find housing.
Yeah, you know, you got to do what you got to do.
God, now I want to see that. See, that's a good pitch, right? You said that, and now I'm picturing it, and I'm like, oh yeah, Billy Eichner. It's like right there. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, mine is going to be MC Hammer, mostly because, because, you know, something that came out recently that was actually clips that were older was that, like, MC Hammer is actually like not to be fucked with, but because of his persona with like the Don't Touch This and the MC Hammer cartoon, everyone assumes he's like this like soft pop rapper when he's really about that life. So it would be really fun to like, you know, be like the real MC Hammer.
let's drive the nail through the true story.
What's he got hidden in those pants?
Yeah. Do you see yourself playing this young MC? Mr. Hammer, in fact, Iffy.
You know, I didn't consider it, but I think you're right. I would be the lead in the MC Hammer biopic and hold it down.
Please, Iffy, don't hurt him.
Yeah.
Right? It's right there.
Yeah.
Please, if you don't hurt him.
Yeah, and, you can go full Le Mercier and like play him from like age 7, you know.
Yeah, that's definitely the plan.
And he would have to. I mean,
I would just it be would be his fictional rest of his life. Like I'm playing him till he's dead, even though he's still alive.
Sure. Like I'm assuming that MC Hammer was like on a season of The Surreal Life or something. Like
one of those.
There's a lot of, you know, very fun other pop culture things you could fold into that.
I was thinking he was a member of the clergy. Am I just conflating him with Reverend Run?
I thought he was a preacher as well. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Mace is a preacher. He turned preacher. And I don't know if Reverend Run actually lived
up to Mace left prophet. Music for that. Yeah. Yeah.
Then he came back and he wasn't good, and then he left again.
And then it was like you should have stayed where you were.
Yeah, yeah, you know,
baby boy.
Here's the thing: with all creative ventures, once you find God, it's not as good anymore. it's been proven time and time again. all right, I guess we can move on and do some staff.
No,
picks.
You don't want to keep digging into that right there.
I want that nugget to stay with folks and go ahead and think on it. And when you come back to me and go, Iffy, you were right. I looked at all these artists that found God and it was bad after.
Oh, there's a whole other episode in that, I think.
Yeah.
Well, Valerie Le Mercier will never see heaven, so we'll hopefully be getting more in the Aline vein to come.
All right. Let's go ahead and do it. Let's jump into staff picks. It could be any movie at all. Drea, why don't you go first?
Well, I picked a biopic. Just kidding. A biopic.
In line with
I got a GIF that I'm recommending. American Splendor. It is currently on HBO Max and rentable for all sorts of things, but it is the kind of film about a real life person that I think introduced a lot of people to someone. And then the people who were fans of Harvey Pekar, who's the main character of it, could recognize how the story and sensibility of this filmmaking matched a lot of the energy and ethos that he brings. It's Paul Giamatti playing Harvey Pekar. Hope Davis plays his wife, and she's bonkers, and I love that for her. And it also has a lot of really interesting sort of blurring of, like, there's documentary elements, there's some animation, because of course he had a cartoon writer, yeah, of course, with Crumb. So anyway, American Splendor, I think people would enjoy it if they haven't seen it yet.
Oh, I love that movie. And it's one of the few biopics that can stand up to having the real person wander in and out of it.
And the crazy wife. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, I was going to go full Celine here, and there's a fun documentary called Celine Through the Eyes of the World, where you get to see her perform and also be a goofball backstage. There's a really good book in the 33 and a Third series called Let's Talk About Love, A Journey to the End of Taste, which sort of talks about the uncoolness of Celine, but then also who decides what's cool anyway, and who decides what's, you know, important or interesting or you know, aesthetically important. And it's one of the best books of criticism I've ever read. But what I'm going to recommend is a 70s movie called The Greek Tycoon, which is a movie about Jackie Kennedy marrying Aristotle Onassis, but they change all the names. But again, it's the widowed first lady of an assassinated president who marries a really rich Greek guy, even though he's still involved with a famous opera singer. And it's like, we know what you're doing, movie. But, you know, as long as the names are changed, what? No, it's a work of fiction. It is not streaming anywhere, alas, but Kino Lorber did put out a very nice Blu-ray of it recently, so get it on physical media.
Oh, I like that. I like the sound of that. You have a staff pick, Kyle?
I do. It's contemporary, or at least it should be around the time this comes out, which is The Northmen. It's the new Robert Akers movie, Vikings, Alexander Skarsgård, Nicole Kidman, Anya Taylor-Joy are in it. I thought it was really good. It reminded me of last year's The Green Knight, in that you have these art house filmmakers who are working in, you know, a sword fighting fantasy adjacent vein, but still making something that is maybe both mainstream and gorgeous, but also high end and artsy. Although Green Knight did not cost nearly as much as The Northman did. When I was watching The Northman, I saw it early and I thought, oh, wow, they really made whatever this small budget is sing. And then I found out it was $90 million. And I was like, oh, yeah, okay. But, you know, I mean, The Green Knight looks gorgeous too and didn't cost, as near as I know, nearly as much. But yeah, a good movie and an interesting path for the director to go after making The Witch and The Lighthouse. I interviewed him yesterday for The Times, found him to be combative and dickish, but I still like the movie.
Very benevolent of you.
Good on you for making that distinction. It's like, yes. I still think Tommy Lee Jones is a good actor, you know?
Yeah.
Mine is kind of in the same vein of Alonzo, you know, a very, you know, accurate, you know, biopic that changes the name so you don't really know who it is. And I'm, of course, talking about 2007's Walk Hard, the Dewey Cox story. That is, you know, that is the, you know, only acceptance of Johnny Cash's life that I'll go. That's obviously what really happened. And I think this is a good runner. If you're having like a movie night, just watch all of these. All the staff picks along with Aline, and I don't think you'd be disappointed.
No.
Yeah. A full evening.
Yes. Well, Kyle, thank you so much for being our special guest today.
It was a blast. Thank you for having me.
Yes, no, indeed.
Where can people find you online? I highly recommend reading Kyle's writings. We mentioned, you know, the Aline review is exquisite and quotable forever, but you have really beautiful things to say. Can people find you online?
And a very fun Twitter follow.
Yes.
Yeah.
I write for the New York Times. You can find me in the pages of the paper or by clicking on my byline. I have a Twitter, Kyle Buchanan, and I wrote a book called Blood, Sweat, and Chrome, The Wild and True Story of Mad Max Fury Road, about a more cursed production than Aline. But... you know, a movie that was incredibly hard to make that turned out to be a masterpiece.
Just like Aline.
It's the Aline of automotive action movies.
Yeah, that's going to be the new metric for film. It's the Aline. You either have an Aline or a Judy. Those are the two types of films.
Right.
Drea and Alonzo, I'm everything I am because you loved me.
Oh, my God.
And I can't remember the last time I was being interviewed on a podcast and they were asking about my triad that I couldn't talk about for so long because of one of the age gaps. The other person's, you know, near the same age as me.
and that's the way it is.
Yes. Look, if you have a comment or suggestion about this week's show, tweet at us at @maximum_film. Our Facebook group can be found at www.facebook.com/groups/maximumfilm, or send us an email at maximumfilm@maximumfun.org, or a voice memo for the hotline. Our producer is Marissa Flaxbart. Our senior producer is the Laura Swisher. This is a production of Maximum Fun, and let your heart go on.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.